You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. A group looking to address housing shortages in Astoria hopes to go to voters with a tax on empty houses. The Astoria Housing Initiative announced on Tuesday that it has received approval to seek signatures for a measure that would tax homes in Astoria that are not being used as housing for the majority of the year. The tax revenue generated would go to a community housing fund to support affordable and workforce housing in the city. Andrew Kipp, one of the chief petitioners for the initiative, says the tax is primarily aimed at homes that are left intentionally vacant and that could otherwise be available as housing to Astoria residents.
Think about it like approaching the problem from two angles. The empty homes tax creates an incentive for people to rent them out, right? Or put them back into the housing market. If people choose not to do that, the revenue from the tax goes into a dedicated fund that allows the city to invest in creating more housing and supporting housing for people who live here and work here full time.
Kipp estimates that more than 300 houses could fit the criteria and nearly $1 million could be generated in the first year if voters passed the tax. The Astoria Housing Alliance needs to collect just over 1,000 signatures from registered voters in Astoria in order to get the measure on the ballot in a future election. The group has 2 years to get the signatures, but Kipp says they have a more ambitious timeline in mind. They hope to gather enough signatures to put the measure on the ballot in this year's November general election. The Astoria City Council is moving ahead with plans to create a designated campsite for homeless residents. At a meeting this week, councilors discussed what criteria they felt city staff should use to go about identifying possible locations for the campsite. They generally agreed that they want the campsite located outside of certain residential zones, but at least one person said during public comment that they felt all options should be on the table. Councilors agreed the campsite should be fenced and that proximity to services and transportation should be among the factors considered. Mayor Sean Fitzpatrick suggested the formation of an ad hoc committee to further weigh in on the formation of the campsite. But other city councilors worried this would slow down a process that has already faced some criticism for its pace. And City Manager Scott Spence says the public discussion will not get any easier.
I think we've talked in the past that this is now becoming all-consuming in our politics. From a staff perspective, we do have, if this is the criteria that council wants us to pursue, and if we get the assistance of two members of council, this is going to be the most difficult discussion you're going to have once we start to identify sites. And there's going to be additional public input about if that's appropriate or not. And so the quicker we get to a point of saying, are we going to do a managed encampment or not, and this is where it's going to be, we need to kind of get to that decision point.
Mayor Fitzpatrick and the newest city councilor, Josh Conklin, will work with city staff on identifying properties to present at a city council meeting on April 20th. This is local and regional news on KMUN. President Donald Trump now says he's pulling back on his plans to escalate attacks on Iran after he faced widespread pressure to stand down. Hours ahead of Trump's self-imposed deadline to either reach a deal with Iran's leader or bomb civilian infrastructure, Oregon lawmakers and other congressional Democrats exerted their own pressure at a press conference in Portland. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker was among them. He called on Republicans to end a congressional recess in order to debate a resolution to end the war.
There is no nobility in what our president is doing or saying. Congress must stand up now. Dear God, Congress should come back in session and do its job.
Some Democratic lawmakers in Washington shared similar comments on social media. U.S. Senator Patty Murray said on Tuesday that Congress should vote to end the war immediately. Earlier on Tuesday, the president warned that Iran's, quote, whole civilization will die if an agreement wasn't struck. That afternoon, he agreed to a 2-week ceasefire on the condition that the Strait of Hormuz reopens. Nearly 3 years after a young man died by suicide in Klickitat County Jail in south-central Washington, a new audit finds conditions are better there. That's after county commissioners removed the jail from the sheriff's oversight. Lawyers for the family say their settlement helped spur these changes. KUOW's Amy Radel explains.
Melissa Howdepat has heard anecdotes about the booking process at the Klickitat County Jail in Goldendale in recent years, and they're positive. People describe in-depth screenings checking into their substance use and mental health.
I feel a little bit better about the safety of people in jail now, in this jail.
Ever since her son died by suicide while in fentanyl withdrawal in that jail, Howdepat has campaigned for changes. She takes posters of Ivan to community events. She worked to pass a state law warning young people about the dangers of fentanyl. And she obtained a $2 million settlement with Klickitat County that required jail improvements.
There's a lot of ways that we are still honoring him, and doing this settlement was one of them.
She says when Ivan was arrested for violating probation, multiple relatives told deputies he suffered from addiction and needed to be closely monitored. But jail officials failed to catch signs that he was at risk for suicide. His death and the near-death condition of another woman, both enrolled members of the Yakima Nation, sparked criticism of the jail's leadership, Sheriff Bob Songer and jail supervisor Lauren Culp. County commissioners looked at closing the jail entirely and sending inmates to Oregon. But ultimately, Howdepat says they kept the jail under new leadership.
I was really, really happy with the fact that they took the jail away from the sheriff. Like, that decision was huge to me.
Bill Franz is the new jail administrator. He previously worked for the Washington State Department of Corrections. The audit says the jail's organization and professionalism have improved under his guidance. Franz says his goal is to make the inmates' experience not miserable.
Oftentimes, a correctional officer will go to their job and they look for what's wrong instead of looking for what's right and rewarding that.
Franz has installed systems in jail cells to monitor inmates' vital signs and set off an alarm if something changes. He's also planning to build a more private area for intake.
So an officer can do a screening where there won't be a police officer standing over their shoulder, right? Maybe the arresting officer.
He hopes more privacy will help people be as honest as possible about drug use and other safety risks. Franz says he's also increased jail cell inspections. Earlier this year, they found a ligature for hanging in one of them. The inmate has two young daughters and was despairing about his long upcoming prison sentence.
We talked extensively to him about things and came up with strategies for him to play a role that he wants in his children's life.
Franz says they facilitated a visit with the inmate's family before he left. The main concern raised in the audit was a lack of medical oversight. The jail has a physician's assistant who normally visits every other week. Attorney Corinne Sebrin helped negotiate the settlement. She says she wants the county to step up and increase that.
They know that certainly the spirit of the settlement agreement was to get more on-site medical care.
But Administrator France says it's not that simple when local hospitals can't find enough providers either.
Even if I had the money to do it, I don't know that I could find a professional that would fill the role.
Gabe Galanda is an indigenous civil rights attorney in Seattle whose firm represented the Howdepat family. He's glad his lawsuits are bringing changes, but with the fourth highest rate of jail deaths in the nation, Galanda says Washington needs more comprehensive oversight.
At present, and I'm really sad to say this, the primary way for jail reform to be accomplished in this state is through litigation because of the inaction of state lawmakers.
In 2023, a task force recommended new statewide standards for jails, but the sponsor, Senator Rebecca Saldana, told the news site Investigate West that lawmakers have lacked the political will to enact them. Meanwhile, another lawsuit by grieving parents resulted in the closure of the jail in Garfield County, where officials said they couldn't afford the needed improvements. Melissa Howdepat and Administrator Bill Franz are in agreement that keeping the jail open in Klickitat County has given inmates more community support. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
An extremely dry winter will leave farmers in the Klamath Basin with less water than they need. Jefferson Public Radio's Roman Battaglia reports.
Around this time every year, the Federal Bureau of Reclamation announces how much water will be allocated to farmers from Upper Klamath Lake. This year, that number is 221,000 acre-feet, which is just over half of what farmers need. Snowpack levels are largely to blame, at just 4% of the average at this time of year. Klamath Basin farmers have struggled for years to get enough water, including in 2021 when they got nothing at all. Last year was the first time in 6 years that there was enough water for everyone. In a press release, Elizabeth Nielsen from the Klamath Water Users Association says this was expected, but it's still disappointing. The Bureau also announced $19.1 million in drought resiliency funding. Some of that money will go toward paying farmers to keep their land idle, which they anticipate the need to do for 40,000 acres this year. I'm Roman Battaglia reporting.
Voters in Lane County, Oregon, will decide this May whether to pass an initiative that supporters call the Lane County Watersheds Bill of Rights. It's meant to make it easier to hold companies accountable for pollution. But opponents say the measure is poorly written and could hurt businesses it was never designed to. KLCC's Nathan Wilk has more.
Justin Workman and Aaron King worry about timber companies spraying chemicals near their home. For nearly two decades, they've lived here on a property near Triangle Lake, about 30 miles west of Eugene. They remember watching helicopters spray herbicide onto the timberland nearby.
Our first one was out of our kids' bedroom window right over here, looking at the hillside.
It's loud if they are close enough. You can definitely hear the helicopter. And if you're unlucky, you'll start smelling it.
In 2011, the couple says their urine tested positive for two different herbicides, including one that the World Health Organization says probably causes cancer. But Workman says it was too risky to sue, since they may have had to pay the defense's attorney's fees if they lost. And besides, Workman says, they feel Oregon's forestry laws are stacked against them.
You can't say, oh, this is in my urine, I'm going to sue him. You can't do that out here. You have to prove it. And even the investigation couldn't prove it. They kept saying, not enough evidence to say that this is from logging. It could be from your exposure of driving to town.
Now, the couple is backing a ballot measure they say could help communities like theirs fight back. Under the Lane County Watersheds Bill of Rights, both local waterways and the land that flows into them would have the right to exist and flourish. That includes having clean water that's free from pollution. King is one of the chief petitioners of the measure.
This measure is all about having standing, being able to represent nature in court to be able to protect it.
If a government or business damaged a watershed, they would need to pay the cost to repair it, and they could face daily fines for failing to take action. Lane County would be required to enforce these rules, and members of the public could also sue a polluter. Another chief petitioner, Michelle Holman, says this is an alternative to an aerial spray ban, which the Oregon Supreme Court has said is preempted by state law.
The government isn't doing a very good job of protecting us from corporate harm, and these practices, while legal, are unjust.
But critics argue the measure is too broad. They say it would lead to a flood of lawsuits, cost the county for enforcement, and scare away businesses. They also say it could be weaponized to block housing developments or wildfire mitigation efforts. Brittany Quick Warner is with the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce and part of the Protect Our County campaign opposing the measure.
Even folks who, you know, are longtime environmental supporters, they understand that the devil's in the details, and the way that an ordinance is written and the way that it's implemented in a community really matters.
Multiple mayors in the county have come out against the initiative. The Eugene Water and Electric Board's commissioners also voted to oppose it, saying it could open them up to potential liability. Betsy Schultz, a contracted advocate for Protect Our County, says she's concerned about parts of the measure that can ignore or nullify existing government agreements.
If it's a building permit or if it's a permit from the DEQ or EPA, you're still potentially liable, which creates just so much uncertainty and room for risk and expense throughout the community.
Critics have raised particular issues with one part of the text, which says the public can force governments to take protective measures even when there's not, quote, scientific certainty or full evidence of the risk. A volunteer for the supporters' campaign, Rob Dickinson, says this phrase doesn't change the standard to prove liability in court. He says Oregon already has laws to discourage frivolous lawsuits and protections for firefighting that this bill likely won't be able to overturn. But Quick Warner with Protect Our County says the lack of certainty is a problem.
It's not clear, and it wouldn't become more clear until lawsuits started to get filed and the courts decided how to implement this. That's just a bad way to create public policy locally when you're talking about voters having to determine yes or no, does this work for our community?
That's okay.
King says it's been more than a decade since companies stopped aerial sprays close to her home. But she says she's still worried about grounded spraying and the long-term health impacts. And she says more clear-cutting is scheduled to begin soon. Looking towards the election, she's hoping there's enough public interest for a measure like this one.
Just gives me hope that we actually have a little bit of recourse when something out here gets harmed, including us.
Measure 20373 will be on the ballot this May. This is Nathan Wilk reporting.
Recent warm, dry weather kicked up tree pollen in the Northwest. As KLCC's Karen Richards reports, what you react to may be linked to your upbringing.
Tree pollen can be spread by the wind as early as January, thanks to hazelnut trees. But Dr. Craig Jacobson with Oregon Allergy Associates says the peak of tree pollen season is right about this time of year.
Because you have so many pollens occurring all at once.
Jacobson says oak, cottonwood, alder, and Douglas fir are among the many trees dispersing pollen right now. He says where you grew up is a factor for allergies.
What you're exposed to, particularly when you're an early teenager, a young adult, you can develop sensitivities to.
People raised on the East Coast may react to oak, and someone from this area might have issues with hazelnut pollen. Jacobson says grass pollen season runs from May to early July. I'm Karen Richards reporting.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. You can email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. The American Democracy Minute is coming up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We're bringing you some state democracy news briefs today, including on the California County Sheriff, who seized over 600,000 ballots based on conspiracy theories, and a court-ordered resentencing of a former county clerk in Colorado who allowed unauthorized access to her county's voting machines. First to Riverside County, California, where Sheriff and GOP gubernatorial candidate Chad Bianco temporarily suspended his investigation of the over 600,000 ballots he seized from 2024's redistricting referendum. Bianco, after being sued by the California Attorney General, said March 30th he suspended the hunt for an alleged 45,000 extra ballots because of, quote, the politically motivated lawsuits and court filings. The AG's case demanding return of the ballots remains. Now to Colorado, where a state appeals court overturned the sentence of former Mesa County election official Tina Peters, convicted on 4 felonies and 3 misdemeanors for allowing unauthorized access to the county's voting machines to find evidence of election fraud. Colorado Newsline reports that while the appeals court took issue with the judge's comments, it did not overturn the jury verdict, just the 9-year sentence, and returned the case to a lower court for resentencing. President Trump has campaigned for her release, but has no power to pardon Peters in a state case. We've linked to the local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN.